I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and eventually this week the Murray T50.
This morning, a song came on the radio and it was an 80s pop hit with a muted trumpet. And I realised you don't hear the muted trumpet in pop songs that often anymore, do you?
No.
Do you know what I mean?
The trumpet's gone out of fashion a little bit, hasn't it?
But the muted trumpet, Rich.
Yeah. Was it? Can I guess what song it was? Oh.
Yeah, I'd love you to guess because I wrote three down. I heard one and I wrote another two down that I thought, yeah, that's an 80s hit with a muted trumpet in.
Was it something by Simply Red? Your laughter tells me I'm either Bob on or Miles off. I can't tell which.
That was it. It wasn't the one that I heard this morning, but it was the one I wrote down immediately. Which one is it? It's the intro. Is it Money's Too Tight to Mention? Or is it...
Might be.
It's Only Love. It's Only Love. It's Only Love.
Oh, yeah. Da, da, da,
da, da. It's got a really, like, echoey, atmospheric, muted trumpet intro. Okay, so I wrote that one down. But the
Hang
one
on,
I...
isn't that the joke? Isn't there's a joke that says, what's the difference between Simply Red and a bull? Well, on a bull, the horns are at the front and the arsehole's at the back. Anyway... go on, what? So, what else did you... You've gone early this week.
Oh, that was my morning coffee that nearly purged through the nostrils that did that. Very nearly purged. Well, it was Robert Palmer, Oh Mercy Me, that was the muted trumpet hit that I heard this morning.
So muted. It's like there's a beach towel over it. Or a duvet.
It's a duvet that someone's thrown into a paddling pool.
He's playing the trumpet from under a duvet. Is that muted enough for you, you bastards? No.
And the other
there's an MG Metro parked outside. Go and sit in that and play the trumpet. That'll be about muted enough.
Yeah, so you had that. And then I thought of a third one because I thought, there was definitely a time for the muted trumpet. It's Fine Young Cannibals, Johnny Come Home.
Oh!
Which is a really cool song.
That's muted, yeah.
And I love that song, but the mute is heavy on that. It's a bit like those exhaust attachments that they use on race cars. What are those screw-in baffles? What were they called?
Yeah, I can't remember, but you have to put them on for track days at some places if you have a certain kind of car, don't you? Testing.
Yes, you screw them in. I mean, and I think session drummers might use them on drums and cymbals, like little pads that you screw onto cymbals. I don't know. But yeah, so there we go. I know it's not exactly like a particularly car-heavy intro to this week's podcast, but I just thought...
You don't say. I know what I wanted to talk to you about, just briefly, because last week we mentioned the Polestar 2, and I hadn't really driven it at that point. I have now driven it, and I've watched your excellent YouTube review of it.
Well, thank you.
And I have some... Well, just briefly, the ride... Yeah. It's inexplicable to me that it has those shock absorbers on. But the plus side of it is that I have never driven an electric car with such body control.
Yeah.
It just manages its weight and the weight of its battery so well. It's extraordinary. But then the flip side is that it rides like a sort of a GT3 spec Porsche.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Well, like a one make series race car.
Yeah. Because it's got that... I was trying to explain it because I was writing about it. It's like it follows every contour of the road with this absolutely sort of iron fist control. So it is like a kind of slightly track day spec Porsche or BMW, like a spicier M car. Because its body control is incredible, but it doesn't crash into bumps. It just sort of follows them really faithfully.
Yeah.
Every single rut and dimple. But the rest of the car, you made the point in your video, the rest of the car isn't like that. So it doesn't match.
Well, no, because the rest of the car is kind of Volvo-derived serenity and luxury inside. So it's almost like someone's ordered a factory-fit touring car but forgotten to delete option the whole interior. Because normally in a race car, it would be completely stripped out with one seat and just a comms button and a steering wheel. And they've gone, oh, no, we didn't think you wanted that. We've left all the infotainment in and the really, quilty seats. You've gone.
That's option pack MT035, and you didn't spec that.
We
put the heated leather seats in for you. Thought you wanted them, like those in Japan. You know, you can get certain cars. Like you always used to be able to get Mitsubishi Evos, and I think you could or can get the Toyota GT86 in full stripper spec with unpainted bumpers and steelies and like really crap seats, because they just assume you're going to throw all of these things away.
They're going to be instant
track
race cars
slash
or
rally prep it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's something blindingly attractive about them, because I mean, taking the kids out, I saw just after I dropped them off a last generation Toyota Prius.
Oh, yes.
But it was obviously a grey import because it was on steelies, naked steelies. And
I know the ones.
I just looked at it and went, oh, that looks great. And then thought, that's weird. I mean, I don't normally feel. I mean, I do think that generation of Prius is about as good looking as a Prius ever got. But the steelies made it because they're really good size for the car. Like, they're not too small. They're just sort of handsome.
They are quite good. They make it look quite stocky, I think. And quite tough. I think I've shown it to you before, that Instagram handle called Steel Wheel Everything.
Where
the guy obviously photoshops quite intricately steel wheels onto like Rolls Wraiths and things like that. And it's just...
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's the gift that keeps on giving. And I was having this argument with someone the other day talking about like, I think the new Defender with its steel wheels, saying the best wheels on the Defender are the base model cheap wheels. And he was like, no, you want the nice alloys. I said, no, because none of the alloys, I don't think, are imaginative enough.
Yeah.
There's not enough alloy wheel imagination right now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And I'm a very, very tough customer for alloy wheels. I want them to be really unique or, bollocks to it, just give me some steels.
Have you seen, I think they appeared last week, the spy photos of the forthcoming Genesis electric car, you know, Hyundai's sort of posh offshoot, Genesis, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it'd be Genesis. Genesis just sounds ridiculous. Sounds like a cabaret singer.
Does your brain ever get jammed on words? I sometimes can't stop thinking about a word and the way it's pronounced, and it becomes meaningless over the course of an entire afternoon. And the one I got stuck on the other day was that I was like, right, a saxophone player would be called a saxophonist, but is a xylophone player a xylophonist?
Xylophonist.
And I just was walking around the house going, xylophonist, xylophonist.
Well, you have an interest in words, so I guess, and me too, so that's why it would stick in my mind. I've never actually heard of a xylophone player being referred to by anything, because there's not that many xylophone players, I don't think. But I might be wrong. I don't know.
They got very much sort of booted out by the muted trumpet lobby.
Oh, yeah, muted trumpet mafia.
Anyway, I was just going to say, so there's some spy photos appeared last week of the forthcoming Genesis electric car. I think it was taken, they're testing it at the Nürburgring, and it's all camoed up, but the wheels are not, and it's got some really interesting alloys on it. Go and check it out.
The Genesis.
It could be right up your Strasse.
Well, last year in Korea, I had the pleasure of driving the top-spec Genesis, and now the name of it completely escapes me. But it's,
was it a G80 or something?
Yes, I think it was a G80, actually. It was S-Class Mercedes size.
Yeah, yeah.
Saloon with a four-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
And it was absolutely gorgeous, and it helped the fact that I had to take it on a skid pan as well as part of what I was doing out there. And so I had this enormous thing on a skid pan, and actually when I started driving it, there was a sort of not great English being spoken to me. Nobody actually told me it was four-wheel drive, so I just assumed it was like a Mercedes S-Class. It was going to be rear-wheel drive. I turned the traction off, and on the skid pan you're going to have about a quarter of an hour before the back end comes right out. And then when it's out, you should be fine. But of course, nobody said it's four-wheel drive. So I got into a bit of a strange situation where I kind of ran out of skid pan whilst I was sideways. And you know, it goes on to super grippy tarmac.
Yeah. That's a rollover incident right there. That, funnily enough, I was invited to a skid pan thing the other day. Some mates were booking on this skid pan day for what are they called, Mission Motorsport, you know, who help wounded service people.
Yeah.
And they said, you should come along. And I was like, Well, now, the battery in my Porsche is still flat as fuck.
Oh, no, not that. Not that. Not
so
that
not that. and so, and my wife, I think, needed our iPace, like, to ferry the kids around. So I'd have had to go to a skid pan day in my Defender. And I just think that's not... It's got a very special set of skills, and skid pan days are not part of that. So I didn't. Anyway, as we're freewheeling around, I'm going to go back to Genesis, just because I remembered I drove in the US. I drove the first big Genesis rear-wheel drive saloon, which I think was just called the Hyundai Genesis, because there was the Genesis saloon and then there was the Genesis coupe, which I've also driven and was really quite nice.
Oh, yes. But
the saloon was delightful. I think mine was a V6. It wasn't the full V8. But like the interior quality was superb.
Yeah.
And it was really quiet, really smooth. It was just delightful, very relaxing car to do some big miles in. And I was so relaxed at one point that I accidentally drove it over a curb that I didn't see.
No, Rich.
Yeah. With American TV's Rutledge Wood in the passenger seat. And
did he go, "Well, man"?
He found it completely hilarious because he was like, "Will Porter, what have you just done?" And I was like, "I don't know, Rut. Don't tell anyone."
That's quite bad.
It was fine. I checked underneath and it was like there was no visible damage, but it was very embarrassing. It wasn't a curb. It was like, you know, in American parking spaces, you get that sort of like a concrete block.
It's a rib. Divides. It's more of a rip, a divide rib than a full curb.
Yes, a rib. Mm. Yeah.
And they didn't know there was one there. They don't paint them.
No, and it was dark, and I just drove over it.
Well, that's fine.
And it made quite a noise. Anyway,
that's...
But the Genesis/Genesis was, I thought, a really good car. They're one of those cars where you sense they've overdone it to make a point, like an original Lexus LS.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, we need to break the market, we need to go in hard.
Yeah.
And that's precisely the... funny you should say about the interior finish and the feeling. That's exactly what I got from the cabin of that G80. I was stunned. I thought if someone had just blindfolded me and put me in here and covered up the steering wheel, I might have thought it was a Mercedes. I might have thought it was an S-Class. It was really that good. I was blown away.
In some ways, it's even better. I mean, I know S-Classes are pretty good, but you know, it's like most cars, even quite high-end ones, you'll find the bit where they've saved a few quid on the interior trimmings. There's a bit I hope you won't notice.
Yeah.
And...
Which isn't hard to find on the Mark 8 Golf, just saying.
Oh, really?
Mm, yeah.
We'll come on to that in a minute, because you've driven the Golf and the ID3, haven't you?
Yeah.
But I was just going to say, before we wrap up on Hyundai and Genesis,
yes.
There was one, you know, they sort of briefly brought that big one, the Genesis, but I can't remember, what did they call it here? I can't even remember now.
No, that's the problem.
I think they maybe did.
I think they did call it the Genesis, yeah, because it's got that logo with the wings, hasn't it? That looks...
Yes.
If you put Vaseline on your eyes, it's a bit like the Bentley wings.
Well, there was one for sale the other week, and I can't find it now, so maybe it's sold.
Oh, you've been a bad man. You've been searching.
Well, someone pointed out on Twitter, but it was. I think I'm going to get the numbers wrong now because
that
I can't,
was well
I can't
rescued.
Find it.
Well rescued. I like that. Yeah. someone pointed out on Twitter. Was it? I didn't really search.
That wasn't me. It's opened accidentally. I wasn't. No, I don't. Don't come back. Honestly, I wasn't looking at.
Wasn't me. Were the words that you told her? It wasn't me. I just got shown it on Twitter. It wasn't me.
Well, $50,000. They were in the UK, those big Genesis saloons, and they must have sold three, I think. Well, one of the three was up for sale the other week, and I think it's 3 years old, and it was $50,000 new, and from memory, it was about $12,000.
Bloody hell.
So
3 years old, so it's still got 16 years warranty left.
Yeah, I think there was a 1,000-year warranty on those, just to be on the safe side. Not because they're going to go wrong, but just because they wanted to give people total reassurance.
You go into a Genesis dealer and they go, "How old are you?" They go, "I'm 50. Okay, we're going to give you a 30-year warranty on this car. That seems fair.
Any more would be a waste.
By the way, if you can hear something rumbling by, it's a tractor doing a bit of... looks like what they're doing is kind of raking in manure into the field next door. Not into my garden, but into the field next door. Yeah. We were talking about xylophonists, and I suddenly got into my head the feeling that is there like a king of the xylophonist world who's like the Travis Barker of Blink 182 in the drumming fraternity, you know, completely tattooed, bit of an animal. Is there a Travis Barker of the xylophone world? Because I'd love it. I'd love it if there was. And there's no fucks given. He's like, yes, I play the xylophone and I do it really well, all right. And yes, I've got tats of all my lovers on my neck. I don't care. And he's had a lot of lovers, you know. Yeah,
but he plays xylophone. I'm sorry, I'm slightly distracted because I am just trying to find this bloody genesis
supposed to be talking about Polestar 2s, and you ran off on the Genesis one. And yeah, by the way, talking of electric Genesises, I keep thinking of that line from that song, turn it on again. I reckon if you don't quite turn on the EV Genesis properly, it has to say that, turn it on, turn it on again, because you haven't quite put your foot on the brake whilst pressing the button, you flute.
Right, I'm going to stop talking about large... valueless Hyundais. But before I do, I've just found the Twitter conversation about that car. It has sold. It's not on Autotrader anymore. But yeah, it was about 50 grand new, and it was 5 years old, and it was £10,000.
Bloody hell.
So it's lost 80% of its value in 5 years.
That's amazing.
But a lot of quality motor car for £10,000, I would imagine. I don't know if you fancied a big rear-wheel drive saloon that's not one of the usual suspects. Who knows?
I'd love to know the demographic of the person that actually bought it. But they are, as we speak right now, they're doing motorway chauffeured driving for hire, and they are totally listening to some muted trumpet pop hits. Can imagine the intro to that Simply Red song in the back of that Genesis? I bet it sounds amazing.
Or imagine the intro to that Simply Red song in the back of a Genesis, but it's played on the xylophone by a xylophonist.
I want that to appear on the Grand Tour in the next 9 months, please.
I was wondering if you could tell me what the VW ID.3 is like, because I tried to watch your video earlier and YouTube wouldn't let me.
Oh, has it been...
It's throwing up an error. I don't know. YouTube's been really stupid for me in the last 24 hours, but...
YouTube's got bored of me. I mean, I wouldn't be bloody surprised.
I wouldn't take it personally, because I also tried to watch the theme tune to Magnum PI, which was stuck in my head, so I thought I might as well just watch the video, the title sequence, and it wouldn't play it for me. It's very frustrating.
I would totally have sooner watched Magnum. I only had 2 hours to drive the ID.3 and film it, so it was a bit frantic. And it's one of those ones, you know, when you first drive a car... And when you finish driving the car, you digest your thoughts thereafter. So I had to get a train to the airport and then get on the plane. And as I was doing all of that, I was sort of mulling over what I'd experienced. I think the thing about the ID.3 is, A, it's been a really long time coming.
Yeah.
The look of it, let's take the exterior, it is a bit of a grower. At first, I was slightly confused by its kind of proportions and things. But actually now, I'm quite down with the exterior. The biggest problem I have with this car is that the interior feels, I think, significantly cheaper than a Mark 7 Golf. And I'm going to say Mark 7 because I drove the Mark 8 Golf GTI while I was out in Wolfsburg. And again, you can tell, I think, the cost cutting on some major textiles and materials inside the car. Which is a shame, but they've done that with the ID.3, coupled with the fact that the ID.3 first edition, which is the one that you get when you put your name down early now, I just don't think it feels... It doesn't have enough kit on it, and it doesn't feel special enough to warrant the extra cash that they're asking. It just feels a sort of a little bit of a token badged version rather than... You know what I mean? And I went away.
I don't get this trend towards first editions anyway.
They're
doing it with the new Defender.
Yeah, they are.
I don't really see the point, except that it has a different badge on the back, and you get a little bit of extra kit. But I've not done the maths to work out if it's even sort of good value compared to if you put all of those bits onto a normal one. Weird.
Well, I personally think that the way they've spec'd the first edition for the UK, they're refusing to have head-up display, and I don't think you can order it with a panoramic roof. And so those are two things which I think really help the ID3. And on the basis of that, I'm like, I would not buy the first edition ID3 because I'm not impatient enough to just want it and that's it. I just want to be the first person in the town with it. So I would probably not do the first edition, and I would meddle with the specs thereafter. But yeah, I mean, it's...
I wonder, are these first editions in fact designed to help bed in a new model in a new factory or what have you? Mm. In as much as they just go, look, yeah, rather than letting early buyers fiddle about and change specs and make our lives harder, here's a first edition. It comes like this. You get to choose the colour. That's it. Sod off. And it's actually a way of manufacturing just easing themselves into the build processes.
That would figure, because this Kia Soul that I've got on as my long-term test car at the moment is a first edition, and it's, you can't really change its spec apart from the colour. And it has everything. And it's about the same price. In fact, it's about a grand less with the government grant than this first edition ID3. And I came away and then landed at Heathrow and drove home in it. And I thought, this doesn't disappoint me at all. In fact, I would rather have a Soul EV 64 kilowatt hour than a first edition 58 kilowatt hour ID3, I think. I think the ID3 drives... It drives really nicely. Like, they've definitely got all the controls feeling good. The steering's lovely. The damping's wonderful on the body control, because I think it feels really golfy. And it doesn't feel rear-wheel drive, because you can't, or I couldn't, seemingly make it fidget and behave like a rear-wheel drive car. The only way you know it's rear-wheel drive, I suppose, is because the steering lock, like the Honda E, is insane. So it's got a steering lock better than a Polo.
Really?
Yeah, it has. So it's really good. But I have to say, the cabin of a Honda E is way more of an event. It feels way more special.
Yeah, but I suppose the ID3 is ultimately meant to be the Golf, parallel universe Golf, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not meant to be an event so much as it's meant to be a kind of functional everyday car for people.
Yeah, and that's the thing I'm trying to constantly balance in my head of, like, this isn't a Golf GTI, it's not the ID3R, if there is going to be such a thing, or an ID3 GTI. So, yeah, I think it's okay, but I would like to see it with maybe some slightly more special interior materials. And I'd like to have a word with the person that did the infotainment, because it shares it with the Mark 8 Golf. And I'm not being funny. When I sat in the Mark 8 Golf, it took me 15 minutes to work out how to turn the air conditioning on. And I saw somebody else, another journalist, go and ask one of the German representatives and say, listen, I've been sat here for ages. I just can't work out how to turn the ventilation on, because it's ridiculously unintuitive. I mean, compared to the old system, It's just lunacy. I can't believe they've even bothered with it, because it just doesn't seem to feel natural at all.
Yeah.
I mean, and they've sort of ruined it. I'm just hoping that they undo that by 2022, because by Jove, Richard, I want an ID Buzz, and I don't want it to have that infotainment. I'd rather have the up. You know, if we knew you're only getting an up and you just plug your phone in and it's just goes, yeah, there's about three knobs and there's your phone. Job done.
Yeah. I haven't driven any of the new Golfs or the ID3, but I noticed from looking at pictures and reading reviews that the temperature control is like a sort of touch sensitive, you slide your finger on a part of the dashboard.
Correct.
And I just thought,
doesn't work.
Doesn't work, does it?
And it certainly doesn't work when you're driving along on a sort of normal potholed road. That's the problem. The collection of steering wheel and haptic buttons or touchscreeny buttons, that none of them quite do it for the stuff that you just want to get in and go, I just wanted at 18 degrees pointing at my feet. job done. I want that to be sorted in less than 10 seconds.
I mean, VW used to be so good at that, because you know, think sort of like Mark II Golf particularly, it didn't have the most attractive dashboard, but that's because they put like the stereo right up the top expressly so that you didn't have to take your eyes off the road too far to do something with the stereo or the heater controls, which, let's be honest, were pretty simple anyway, and you could do by touch. And so they've sort of... they've kind of wanked all over their own brand values there a little bit in the most stupid way. Also, have I seen this right, that the ID3 doesn't have, on the driver's door, where you'd normally, in a car with four electric windows, have four switches, it only has two switches, and you have to press a button to make those switches work the rear.
Oh.
Is that right?
Bloody hell, Rich. I was too busy sweating like mad.
Too busy trying to work out the air conditioning.
I was too busy trying to work out the air conditioning. I had a proper, like, water feature of a head that day because I had a panoramic roof. Couldn't work out the air conditioning. Obviously, when you're filming, you can't put the windows down because it's too loud. Oh, it was awful. I just looked like a rubbish water feature. I'll have a look. I'll go back through the footage and have a look at that because I didn't know that.
I saw a picture of it, and it appears to me there's two, you know, the standard sort of electric window switches, and then there's a, well, I think it's touch sensitive button that says rear.
Yeah.
And from that, I sort of deduced, okay, so you have to, I'm guessing, to work the rear once you press where it says rear, and then what were the front switches become the rear switches.
That's just annoying. Is that cheaper? I suppose it must be. But then that's probably
a bit cheaper.
But that's blatant cost saving to the point where us, the consumers, go, ooh, you look like you're... You look like you're being a bit El Cheapo there, don't you? You know.
Yeah. It's funny how stuff like that, you sort of, it is often all cost saving, isn't it? It's like very cheap cars often have electric window switches in the centre, in the dashboard.
That's right.
Or between the seats, because then they don't have to flip them for left and right and drive. And
that's right.
You can save a bit of wiring.
Save a couple of metres of wiring. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, or what other cars? I think actually the Up. From memory, the Up doesn't have twin switches on the driver's door. You have to lean across, old-styly, to work the passenger electric window if you wanted to do that.
It's pleasantly narrow, though.
It is pleasantly narrow.
Yeah.
And I've got unpleasantly long arms, so it's never been an issue. I mean, it's rare that you sort of go, oh, no, I need to put the passenger's window down while I'm not it. There's no one in the passenger seat. But I do need to put the rear windows down, because sometimes my kids ask if they can have the windows down. Either to just, you know, even just sort of like they're saying goodbye to their mum as we're pulling away from outside the house. Oh, can we wave to mummy, put the window down? You know, like,
No, you can't.
I'm generally an authoritarian Victorian spec dad, but I will allow them the windows down sometimes. But Nada can't have control of them because that's too much. So their windows are isolated.
You're as bad as my brother. My brother refuses to do toilet stops on long journeys.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, I mean, he's a nasty piece of work, my brother. Yeah. I mean, seriously. His kids are now old enough because they're almost both teenagers. So basically, you're very careful with your water intake during the journey.
Yeah, I know, he's an absolute animal. He's terrible.
I'll tell you what, I borrowed the other week a Mercedes GLS, you know, the absolute humdinger SUV, the huge one that's like
GL just called the GL?
Yeah, yeah. Now they've tried to, because they want all the SUVs to be in line with the saloons and estates, so yeah.
So it's GLS, S-class sized S-class, SUV. Yeah.
Well, it is.
It's a good car, or it was. I mean, I've done a big road trip in one of those once. Had a massive road rage incident in one. But anyway, I don't want to rob your anecdote.
Yeah. Sounds like your anecdote might be better than mine, because mine was just that. Well, first of all, actually, I got into not a skirmish, but I came up behind a BMW M4 on a slightly twisty road, and the chap was dawdling, if I'm honest.
What?
And then
hang
on. Decided to up it a bit, and I started trying to keep with him, and he obviously wasn't trying too hard. Or
he was changing his vape liquid flavour. You know he was.
Almost new M4. Are they still vapey? I think they need to be second or third owner before they go vapey.
Is it the M2 vape competition Zioni or whatever it would be? Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You've put me in my place. It's got to be second gen on the tick, third gen perhaps purchase outright.
Yeah, because it's fallen in value. Now, this was almost new, but you know, the reason I bring this up is just because, not to try and claim that I'm some kind of Tillerman, but that the GLS is at sort of driving at its sort of 80% is weirdly good at going around corners without tumbling off the road. Because it's got, you know, air suspension and active gubbinry on it.
Is it all 48 volt active suspension shizzle?
I'm glad you asked me that, Johnny, because I can confirm that I don't know. I think so. Do you know what? I had the bloody PDF of the spec sheet on my computer for ages, and I think I've just deleted it because I've written about it. Anyway, it's
PDF.
It has got a lot of. It's just odd. I mean, it still rolls, but it just controls its mass surprisingly well. But the reason that I mention it is because it had electric sunblinds on the rear side windows and a button on either side that also did the sunblind on the panoramic roof, and you couldn't disable them. And my children spent every journey in that car just constantly opening and closing
blinds
until I told them to knock it off.
I bet you were seething.
No, I was reasonably tolerant of it for a while, but then it just after, I was like, you're going to break this car and it's not Daddy's car. But they thought that was the coolest car I think I've borrowed in a long time, purely because it had electric sunblinds. And it was only surpassed by the Land Rover Discovery 5 that we've just been on a little holiday to Norfolk in, which I borrowed for that trip, which they announced, apropos of nothing, was the coolest car ever.
Really? And yet you own a Defender, so they're used to a big high-up thing.
Now, I'm trying to remember what prompted the coolness. What Us being on holiday helped, but no, was it the coolest car ever, or just this car? I think my boy, who's six, went, Daddy, this car is really cool. And I don't remember him saying that about, I don't know, an Aston Martin DB11 or something.
No, but it's funny, isn't it? I had the DBX a few weeks ago, and one of the kids really liked it, but the other one, I think, I loved it. They immediately cross-referenced it to the car we borrowed last summer to go on holiday in, which is a VW Caravelle. And they went, oh, this is good. And then she paused and she went, yeah, but the VW that we had with the electric sliding doors last year, I think I probably prefer that. And she was analysing
it. It's amazing.
She was totally analysing it. I loved it. I wanted to give her a massive hug and go, yes, you're one of us. You're one of us. Damn it.
I think one of the reasons my kids gave for liking the Discovery, which was a tremendous going away on holiday with the dog and the kids' car, but they liked it because the colour of the interior, because it had a light-coloured interior. And I think they found that snazzy. So,
well, it's good for the reasons. A bright interior is good for the soul, though. And I'd love it if people started. We've probably said this before with exterior colours, but maybe being a little bit more bold and happy with their optioning. Because I do like it when there's a car that isn't dark grey or black, with a dark grey or black headlining, with dark grey or black door cards, and then a tint. Because you do feel like you're in a leather-smelling cave, which just sounds like a terrible metal band.
Leather smelling cave.
You're gonna have to. Can you do your John Peel on that one? You must do.
Okay, up tonight in session, leather smelling cave. But first, this is light interior.
Oh yeah, maybe that's their first hit.
Speaking of the Caravelle, we've already booked to go on holiday again in the October half term. We're going up to Suffolk this time.
Oh, piss off, and Richard. You're being so bloody organised and holiday-y.
Yeah, you know me, you know my wife. Which one of us do you think sorted this out?
You were going to hang around the park and drink cider and just have the kids sat on a tartan rug playing Lego.
Yeah, whereas she went, I think we should go away. Well, actually, what happened was she was talking to a friend of ours whose son is in the same class at school as our boy, and they conspired together that we should all go away. Two families rent a big house up in Suffolk, which we're doing. But there's already this thing where we only booked it this week. It's like, looking at the details on the Airbnb page. Now, where are we? Which bedrooms are we going to put the kids in and stuff like that? Where's it going to?
Organised. I feel so lacklustre.
Well, so since you mentioned the caravel, I was suddenly thinking, maybe I could just borrow a Grand California off Volkswagen. I'll sleep in that outside.
That's a great idea, because you could be the sort of unwashed, slightly drinky dad. Just for a bit of a break, just a complete departure from your normal character. Just, I'd love that.
Yeah, because I do wash.
You do normally wash, and I mean, you probably have moments of being a bit drinky, but...
I haven't had a drink since... when have I not had a drink? Well, I mean, it's days, put it that way. I'm not saying weeks.
Not since March. You're not going to say March, yeah. Are you?
God, no. what was I saying? Oh yeah, no, actually no. Sleeping in a caravel outside while your wife and family are in a house has a sort of messy divorce vibe to it. That maybe I should borrow a California and shut the kids in it at night, and then the adults can all have a glass of wine and make noise. And kids love sleeping in camper vans, don't they?
They do. They've, in fact, this was the year that I was going to take my children away independently to go either campervanning or caravanning, because I said, look, I'll take the oldest one away first, and we'll do a weekend of wilderness, borrow a campervan like a Mercedes Marco Polo, and really kind of enjoy it, and we'll do a bit of, you know, fishing, we'll do a bit of like boating or whatever, or just maybe just daddy's just drinking and pointing at a good vista or whatever it might be. But no, I haven't done it yet. But yeah, I think I have not driven the Grand California yet, but I'd very much like to drive the Grand Cali.
Well, as you know, I don't like camping, and what appeals to me about the Grand California is that it's got a loo,
and you can stand up and pull your trousers on.
Yeah,
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 yeah. It does help having the toilet facility, but of course you have to.
But empty. I do look at Californias, and they're not cheap, are they? But I do like. I hate camping. I hate tents. I hate caravans. I see no appeal in any of that. And yet I look at Volkswagen Californias, and I suppose those Merc Marco Polos, and go, ooh, fancy one of those.
Do you know what they're really
good at? I
could
see myself on a clifftop somewhere remote, gazing out at the sea, having a cup of tea in the back of my California.
And that's what it's about. I think as soon as you go away for a week or more, then it doesn't work. But if it's what I would class as a sort of day van, I could understand having a Cali that you use as a bit of a family car, but also you go away for lots of little weekends, so one night away or two nights away. And I think then they work beautifully, because two nights away you can put up with the constraints. And also you can have a wet white wash, you know, have a festival wash, and it's acceptable, because you know it's okay, because in 24 hours I'll be back at home, I'll have a proper shower. Yeah. Whereas if you were to go away as a family of four in a Cali for 10 days, I think there'd be bloodshed. There'd be degradation of relationships.
Yeah.
That's just my personal view.
No, I completely agree with where you're going on that. I just remembered that we haven't talked in the past 3 or 4 weeks about the Gordon Murray T50, which everybody's been getting in a lather about.
Oh yeah, there was a huge fanfare over that, wasn't there? it looks quite cool, actually.
Yeah, I like the way it looks. I like it. It's sort of unfussy, isn't it?
It's very, very, very unfussy. Yeah, it's very unfussy. But I think I know that Gordon's that kind of guy, and the F1 was quite unfussy, actually.
I sort of feel this almost makes the F1 look fussier, because it's so... My first thought was that the front, not inexplicably, there are certain sort of angles and lines that reminded me of the Mark III Toyota MR2.
The Mark III,
which is a weird thing to know.
The body kit with the optional twin snorkels.
No,
was that the Mark
III?
Oh, that is, sorry, that's the Mark II. That was the best looking one.
The convertible one that had no boot to speak of. That was quite... It was nice to drive.
With the froggy eyes.
Froggy eyes, yeah. I think Gordon Murray might have approved of it, because it was quite light. But it's the headlights on the T50 are a little bit similar somehow. Anyway, the rest of the car doesn't look like that, and I do think it's quite sort of appealingly unshowy might be a better way of describing it.
It's unshowy, and I watched a couple of the released videos on it. One of them was good old Harry Metcalf's little chin wag with him, and I thought, I think what turns me on the most about Gordon's sort of pet projects is,
I thought you were going to say Harry there.
What turns me on about Harry?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I like Harry. He's
Where'd
a good
you start?
Guy, but yeah, exactly. Where the hell do you start? I mean, okay, you could start with the fact that he calls it Harry's garage. It's not a garage. It's an aircraft hangar. You know it is. That's not a normal garage. A normal garage is where you have to shuffle past the car, you open it, you bang the door on the side of the wall, and there's a load of shit which falls down off a shelf, like a windbreak you've never ever taken to the beach, which lands on the bonnet. Yeah. Harry doesn't have to do all that. That's not a garage, Harry.
Oh, hello. Just going to shuffle past all of these half-used tins of paint here just to get to the... Oh, goodness, I've fallen over a child's bicycle.
Just taken a chink of paint out of the Lamborghini. In fact, it's only just come up from the paint shop. That's a real blow.
That'd be great if Harry decided to convert his existing barn into one very long single-car garage.
What, like a 19...
Just like a tunnel on. It's almost infinite.
Like a train carriage.
Yes, exactly. But then you go, the old Alpha is about 16 cars in. That's annoying to drive. He's got to do a massive amount of shuffling, and you know some of the cars won't start. And
he lets
Harry's
the viewers choose which car.
Long. Yeah,
review the Carrie. Can you review the one at the back? I was hoping you weren't going to say that. Okay. Well, we were supposed to go drive to Marseille this afternoon, but I've just spent the last 4 hours trying to get the 33rd car out. And actually, Harry's a massive fan of continental driving, so why doesn't he buy a retired Eurostar train? You know, a Channel train.
Yeah,
and have all of his cars like that in single file. Inside a big aluminium tube.
What, are you suggesting that then he's allowed to just simply then drive that to the Eurotunnel? They let him drive it through because he's allowed for some reason.
We're now getting sidetracked thinking about Harry's garage is no longer a garage. He's a train driver that just carries his own cars.
Harry's train of cars.
That's brilliant.
And then he could have the buffet car still as it was, and he could, you know, hang out in there, interview people. Joining me today in the buffet car, it's Gordon Murray.
Gordon Murray. Gordon's got a Scottish egg on the go, but it's a very, very... It's a very...
Gordon, I see you're having a can of Stella Artois. I didn't realise I'd have to drive at the other end, Harry. It wasn't made clear to me.
But I've committed now. It's okay. We've got a sleeper carriage somewhere down the back. You can just sleep it off and you'll be just fine. Oh, by the way, we've got a ton of miniatures underneath the tarpaulin down there. Have a couple. Yeah, if you just go down the end, and once you've got to the Alan, turn right, and you'll see a small cabinet, and it's got a load of very tiny Glenfiddichs in it. If you can bring six or so back, that would be great.
But Harry's not looking so great on camera these days because he has to live off... microwaved ham and cheese toasties from the buffet and whiskey miniatures. And it's having a bad effect on his complexion.
Well, because he's in an underground train, he's got the sort of complexion of a snooker player.
He's gone very pallid.
He's gone very
pallid indeed. Not seeing enough sunlight by half.
Oh, he's got an absolute Jimmy White tan, hasn't he?
We've drifted away a little from the T50.
The almighty T50, which, when it was released, the first thing I thought, actually, was the name. I thought, I've heard of a car called that before. But it turned... And I thought, a little micro car from the 50s called a Berkeley.
Right.
And I could have sworn that they'd made a T50. And then I had to look it up and they'd made a T60.
Oh.
But I don't know... And I bet you Gordon Murray likes the Berkeleys because they were like a... They were like a three-wheeled E-type Jag that had been put in a microwave, something like that. And actually, they're quite cool cars, but I could see Gordon having a bit of appreciation for those. But in all seriousness, I think the I think the fascination for that car is, of course, the packaging. And when he was talking about the spec of the air conditioning, and he was also criticising his own, the McLaren F1, saying there are several things I could never do with it, and there were several things I was really unhappy about when it went out. So you're thinking, hang on, you sold a car for, what were they, 300,000 or 400,000? And he basically said, well, you know, the air conditioning in the cabin was crap, and he's managed to remedy all of those things. But I think I really quite like it. There's lots of people are gushing over it, and I had to stop myself from being so gushy on the basis of, like, of course it's supposed to be good. It's nearly £3 million. If it was crap or average and it was nearly £3 million, I mean, what? Seriously, can we all just pull ourselves together?
Yeah. Well, now, I have a question that I would love to ask Gordon Murray, because he's an Alpine A110 owner, isn't he? That's his daily car, apparently.
Yeah.
And he loves it because it's light. I know in the past he's had smart roadsters, which, again, I went to interview him about his smart roadster when I had one, and he loves them because of the principle of them: small, light, you know, flawed,
enjoyable.
But he just, yeah. And now this is the thing: what the smart roadster and the Alpine have in common is that, particularly the smart, they do what they do at fairly low speeds, so they're easy to enjoy on normal roads in the modern world.
Yeah.
What I'd love to ask Gordon Murray is, T50 has had to be a supercar to make the maths add up as a business proposition. But if you took that out of the equation, wouldn't he rather just make his own version of the Alpine? Or would that just be pointless because there's already the Alpine? I'm sure he can't think it's perfect. There must be things he'd do differently. I think, I suspect, if money wasn't an issue and he didn't have to make a business case for it and have to make something that he can legitimately charge £2-3 million for, he'd probably rather make a sports car rather than a supercar, because he's a very intelligent, pragmatic man, clearly, and he knows that the T50 will be wonderful, I'm sure, but it'll be very hard to use to anything like the full extent of its performance on roads anywhere in the world.
I think it's got to stack up as a business case, hasn't it? It has to.
Yeah. It has to be a V12 supercar, but I think that's why I was like to say, you know, come on, Gordon, if you didn't have to do that, if you didn't have to worry about it being worth the money that it would need to amortise its development costs and make a little profit and what have you, wouldn't you rather it had a little 3-cylinder engine or something?
I was thinking that. I was thinking, could you do a T50 Junior, which is V6. Paired back in a couple of other places, you know, thinner tyres, obviously down on power, but down on weight. But I fear that if he ever heard me say that, he would cuss me and say, you've basically just undone the last 5 years of my life in one sentence. So I definitely wouldn't want that. But so I heard, and I didn't know this until a week or so ago, I hear he's got a Suzuki Jimny as well.
Yes, I heard that somewhere. Or did you tell me that?
I don't know. I can't remember. He's got a new Jimny, which I love. And and with the regards to the Alpine, I would love it if after a year or so of him living with the Alpine, he thinks, do you know what? I could just gut the interior and make a 3-abreast seating situation out of this car. It might not be middle driving position. It might still be right-hand drive, but with the old staggered two buddy seat type of arrangement, and then he could put a nice little wand on a plinth. I do like the wand on the plinth, I have to say, of the T50. It looks great.
Yeah, it's quite a long gear lever, isn't it?
It's very wandy, in the same way that the early Koenigseggs were quite wandy,
but a very, very narrow gate.
Yes, I like that.
I like it in principle. I look at it and go, oh God, you could miss shift, or maybe you can't. Maybe it's so precise that he's thought of that.
You're talking about GMA. That's what I like. Gordon Murray Automotive, GMA. He does immediately sounds like a rap artist. that he would collaborate with other people. There's a new track out by GMA, and you go,
is it called Lightweighting with no G on it?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely Lightweighting, you know, with GMA.
GMA. Saving pounds wherever I go. Yeah, I do really like the look of that car, and I'm sure it'll be, you know, blisteringly fast, but about more than that.
It's exciting.
I mean, as I gather, it's really small in the flesh as well. It's like it's really disarmingly tiny, and it's insanely light for its engine size and everything. So,
yeah,
it's very promising. And it's very interesting, and he's also. I was listening to him talking on another podcast, and he's got a very good speaking voice. Like, he's one of those people you could listen to for hours.
He does, because it's calm and it's low. I think it's one of those voices where he would never have to raise his voice in order to get attention, and that's quite a hard trait to earn.
Yeah,
but actually, I always thought, apart from this ever so slight South African twang, which does come in now and again, but it's very, very well hidden. I think he sounds a bit like my dad.
Really?
Yeah, honestly, he does sound a little bit like my dad. My dad has a similar kind of voice, and I've always thought my dad's voice is a good kind of reading voice. I've encouraged him once or twice to offer himself up as a voiceover artist, because I think he might be able to earn a few bob, you know, get the pay for the golf to be serviced or whatever. But I do honestly, I like Gordon's voice. The other thing, I think, in the same way that people like listening to interesting car people that don't kind of brag, Ian Callum's got a voice like that as well, because it's quite soft.
Yeah,
but he has
good
accent. It's a kind and warm accent, but at the same time, you know, he's got authority, and you want to know his opinion on stuff because you value it.
Yeah,
and I like that.
Okay, so top three car voices: Murray, Callum.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone in motorsport who's got a sort of a good.
In motorsport,
someone who's
Matt Neal's got a very kind of relaxed sounding voice, I think. And there's never a sound that it never sounds urgent.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah, it's a good quality to have. Drive urgently, speak softly.
What about Dario Franchitti? I mean, I know he's another
accent,
another Scotsman. Yeah.
Good accent, tempered with a sort of slight transatlantic thing, which Gordon Murray has got as well, you know, sort of soft tease a little bit, which I guess maybe is part of his South African heritage. But
like a friendly, warm, handsome Jackie Stewart.
You see, I find Jackie's voice a little harsh. Nizzle.
Very, very, very nasal. Oh, no, hang on. I know who we're missing out. I know who we're missing out. Mark Webber.
I guess Webber's.
He's obviously Australian, but
yeah,
he's a very warm, friendly Australian. And if he does kind of abruptly take someone down or disagree, it's not aggressive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, he's got that calm authority to him, which is obviously part of the good voice.
I wish I had calm authority.
Yeah, me too. Like when I'm trying to tell my kids to stop fucking about with the rear electric blinds in a big Merc, I wish I had calm authority, not going, "Stop it!" Which is...
As soon as you've broken into a bar, you know you've lost the battle. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's fatal. And yet, too easy to do, unless, I guess, you are Gordon Murray, who I imagine...
Even when Gordon's under time pressure to sign off a certain aspect of the T50, I bet he didn't really raise his voice. I mean, he might have thrown a couple of F-bombs out, but they would have been just quietly exhaled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the man was like the only designer at Brabham for, I think, 3 or 4 seasons. So imagine the pressure. He must have been knackered, but
yeah,
if you can do that, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Hence, he's just invented a new V12 hypercar. But
I know it's not a new observation, but when I watched those T50 walk-around videos and the unveils, I did think... Aside from the fact that I'm fascinated by his house, because I've read a lot about it and I know a few other people have been there. You've been there?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's very nice.
Oh, Rich. Oh, it sounds fantastic, especially the cinema. Have you seen the cinema? Did you go in the cinema?
No, we went into a sort of circular sitting room that looked out onto a big lawn, and he showed me how he designed these inverted flying buttresses kind of thing that made up the kind of I don't know what the architectural term is, but the ceiling, and he'd had little LED downlighters inserted into them.
Oh,
very
yes.
Subtle, but very elegant. I specced these myself, he said. And that was years ago as well, when LEDs were still a bit of a novelty. But
I remember you saying that now. That's come back to me. But I would love to just see how many shirts he's got and to see how they're arranged in the cupboard. Are they graduated as like a Pantone palette?
Like a glorious rainbow.
Do you know what I mean? So they start at one end with white. They finish at the other end as black, but you've got everything in between. You go from the beiges into the oranges and the browns and the yellows and the greens. And the, oh, man, I bet it's majestic. I really like his shirts.
I'm seeing some kind of mobile rack system. Not motorised, that's adding needless weight, but very easy to move by hand because it's beautifully damped and very carefully. Yeah, it's just the bearings in it are lovely, so there's no need for it to be motorised.
No.
And it just moves silently, just swishes around.
One swish with the index finger.
Through the rainbow of shirts.
I'm serious. I would absolutely love to see the shirt selection. I'm desperately jealous of the.
You should do a vid.
The array.
Ask him if you can do a vid. Like, go, Gordon. Yeah, screw it. I don't want to talk about your new car. Everyone's talking about that. I want to come and see the shirt.
It's welcome to GMS, Gordon Murray Shirts Limited. We're now going to be.
What if, in fact, his clothes storage system and indeed his bedroom is an absolute frigging shambles? What if he's really messy in that part of his life and we just hadn't considered it? If they're all on the floor,
well,
and they're all dirty and he has to sniff one to before he can work out if he can get another day out of it.
Or it's one corner's crumpled and he's got no others left. He's got an interview in about 20 minutes. Like, just like, you know, like the real world.
I'll hang it up in the shower while I have a shower. That'll sort it out.
I would very much like, do you know what? He could get away with doing a Gordon Murray shirt, because you could have a Hawaiian shirt and the little motifs could be little call-outs to historical milestones. I could see that actually working, and I really would probably buy that. Limited edition, GMS, Gordon Murray shirts.
Gordon, if you're listening, we will take 15%. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Well, it's probably a good time to wrap things up. But if anyone's got a nomination for Best Voice in Cars, then get in touch. Leave a comment on our YouTube channel where these podcasts are always posted, or on Twitter where we're always hanging around plugging this and other nonsense. Speaking of which, if you want to see Johnny doing some car reviews and things like that, go to his Car Pervert YouTube channel. A current review of the ID3 is up there, as well as the Polestar 2, the London Electric Vehicles van, and all sorts of other treats. And if you are very, very bored, please go to Amazon and buy my medium-sized book of boring car trivia. I thank you.
Can we finish this on one question to you?
Me?
We started talking about muted trumpets and 80s pop hits.
Yeah.
Can I finish it by saying the intro to that Simply Red song is on. I want you to choose the place, the era, and the vehicle. Go. I can sing it if it helps. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, yeah, dun, I'm dun, seeing dun, it's the dun, dun, it's a suspension dun, dun, bridge of some sort.
Oh, okay. At night or in the day? Okay, at night.
Night.
Yes.
In an aero shape Audi 100.
Oh, okay. I'm going 7 bridge. Should we go 7? Is that a good enough bridge?
Yeah, I was going to go Humber, but yeah, 7's good. It's an Audi 100 aero shape.
Yes.
And the driver is never going back again.
Oh, female, male.
I'll leave that to your imagination.
Oh, I love this. This is an amazing cliffhanger. It's
all right. Well, we'll be back for more of this nonsense next week. But thank you very much for listening. If you enjoy Smith & Sniff, please do like and subscribe and leave a review if you don't mind, unless you hate us, in which case keep it to yourself, you shit. See you next week. Goodbye. Yeah.